listening to People Powered Radio, proudly supported by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. cbf.com.au.
And welcome back to Community Connections on Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the voice of the valley. And being the first Wednesday of the month, blimey, we're into December already. Christmas is around the door. But anyway, between 1 and 2 is our regular spot with Peter from Absolute Facts. And for those of you who've listened before, Peter is a private investigator, and he tells us what he's been up to, and over the years he's had, I thought he disappeared. But one of the things that last time we had a number of questions that Peter went away to do some work on for us, and if you've got any questions that you want answered about anything to do with a private detective, because I've said to Peter many times, we all think it's the fast cars, the flashy birds and all that, but it's not like that at all. But if you've got any questions about aspects of law or you'd like to ask Peter, give us a ring on 59 615 99 59 615 99. Peter, we sent you away with a bit of homework last time, which was terrific. One of the things we asked was the breakup between residential and commercial properties as far as burglaries, and you've done some work on that.
Yes, good afternoon to you and your listeners. Yes, I came up with the answer that that's approximately two-thirds of burglaries are in fact residential.
Why would you think, Peter? Are they an easier target than businesses, or is there any particular reason?
I suspect it might just have more to do with the volume of residences compared with the volume of commercial properties. So perhaps the ratios are similar. It's just that there's more houses out there.
Oh, that's fair enough too. And you were saying here that there was how many burglaries last year?
Yeah, so there were 33,242 burglaries reported in Victoria in 2020, that's the calendar year, and in fact that was down from 41,832 in 2019, I suspect because a lot more people were at home during that
period.
Couldn't
go out.
And the other interesting stat that came out of that was the riskiest postcode is 3335, which is the Rockbank... and I'll probably get this right or wrong, Truganina area.
Yep.
Might be Truganina.
Truganina,
sure.
I think. So that's the riskiest postcode the whole lot.
Yeah, so I assume that's coming from either Victoria Police or RACV or something like that would be those stats.
Yep. And you've done some research, I see, on the reasons why your house isn't burgled.
Yeah, so I was actually looking around for some content and follow up on what we've been talking about, and I was able to find the top five reasons why your home was not burgled. And this information, I have to credit Budget Direct, and they're saying that these statistics were actually provided by offenders. I'm not exactly sure what that means. But
the crooks.
So what they came up with was if you have window or door grills, that was a 19% reason why you were not burgled. Lights on within your residence was a 19.3% reason why they'd move on to somebody else. Working sensor lights, which I think we talked about last month, 22.8%. A proper alarm system, which I'd assume to read as functioning alarm system, 49.1%.
Gee, that's a big reason, huh?
Yeah, to move on. And as we experienced at the end of the show last week, a loud dog, no matter what the size, 64.1%.
Gee, that makes a big difference, doesn't it?
It does. And look, Alan, I've heard, and I can't remember whether I've mentioned this previously or not, but there are actually on the black market, in inverted commas, charts being made available whereby a house with a dog is actually marked off, or alternatively a house with no dog is marked off as a potential burglary target. So the crooks can have some access to some interesting information.
They put a bit of work into us, don't they?
Yeah, well, I presume that means people have just sort of walked around and either knocked on the door or walked past at night or something like that. And if the dog barks, it gets across. And if there's no dog barking and no sensor lights and no alarm sticker or obvious alarm box, I guess you might be unfortunate enough to have three ticks put against your residential address.
True. Peter, we've had a question already, and I don't expect you to be able to answer this straight off. So maybe you'll be back in February, so it's not all that urgent. But we've just been asked, like you've said, that the rock band Troganana, or anyway, is the hot spot or the riskiest spot. What's the riskiest spot where the offenders come from? Because I would suspect if you're a crook, you're not going to rob a house in Rockbank because you may very well get seen by someone who knows you. And I'm wondering whether, say, somewhere like, I don't want to stigmatise areas, but that the offender might actually live in the southeast or something like that and travel to do the crime and go home again. Could you have a look at that for us for the new year, please?
Yeah, look, I can have a look. I don't have any knowledge in that regard at this point in time, but I'll do some homework on it. What I can tell you is from the corporate client that I work for, yep. People are prepared to travel substantial distances around Greater Melbourne to try and achieve what they need to achieve. So the fact that they might live in the Yarra Valley does not mean they're not going to go to Geelong.
It would make sense if you were to commit crimes in the area you live, there'd be a bigger chance of getting caught, wouldn't it? Or somebody would know you rather than if you were, say, committing a crime in Geelong but living out this way.
You'd think so, and possibly also an element of your vehicle might be known in your locality
as well. Yeah, that's true. Peter, I've just got to take a quick... No, we won't. We'll go on to the next one because this surprised me. We're going to talk about... We talked about domestic violence in respect to the gender, and I'm going to let you give the numbers, but whenever I've done anything on domestic violence, it's always a belief that about 95% of the are male, the perpetrators, and yet when I get off air, I'll often have guys around me say, mate, I've been beaten up in a relationship. So do you want to just talk us through that? The numbers there are a bit amazing, and I think it'll surprise a lot of people.
Yeah, and I owe you an apology because I didn't write down where I got this stat from, but it was an official statistic that came Sorry. Out. So basically what it's indicating is 75% of perpetrators of domestic violence are male and 77% of the victims are female. And I put a comment in brackets there to mention, as you've just alluded to, I expected both numbers to be slightly higher than that.
I thought that they'd be a lot higher, to be honest. Peter, is there any reason why? But I mean, that's probably too broad. We can't really go down that. But it does seem to be that whenever there's advertising on the TV and that, they always seem to be aimed at the male. But I mean, 25%, or even if that 25 was 20%, it's still a lot of females involved, isn't it?
It appears that way, and I guess the other thing that could maybe move the statistics a little bit, particularly about the 70% of the victims being female, is that there could be quite a bit of this could be domestic violence in the family home. So it could be father and son, for argument's sake, which would perhaps be a reason why it's only 77% females are the victim, that kind of idea.
Oh, I see. So if, say, the father beats up the son, that just comes under domestic violence the same. It's not just domestic violence, isn't just male against female or husband against wife or boyfriend against girlfriend.
Yeah, look, I suspect it might be the other way around. I think in the current climate, it's possibly more likely the son beating up on the father. And there's this whole sort of trend that's coming up called this under the banner of elder abuse, where the parents are sitting on a massive asset in a home, probably cash poor, and the children are desperately trying to get into the housing market and really just can't afford it. So there's all that connotations and things that are occurring along that elder abuse line.
Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah, I didn't realise that would come under domestic violence because my view, that's not my view, just the way I thought of it, I just assumed that it would be... male against female. I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah, and I've come across an interesting comment that came up. It's a topic called inheritance in patients, which kind of summarises what I've just mentioned, again, about the parents sitting on valuable real estate and perhaps superannuation, and the children are kind of eyeing that off and have the frustration of, you know, very little money behind them, having to save so much to even get a deposit on a house. And so that's now a terminology called inheritance impatience.
Fair dinkum. Jeez, I've ever got a word for it. And I guess mum and dad won't push off quick enough.
Well, that, from the children's perspective, that could be the case, yes.
Peter, my knowledge of cars goes back to a long while ago, where if you carried a set of points, a fan belt, and you could get a car going. So you're going to tell us about a catalytic converter. I'm not sure if half us know what that is, or maybe it's just me.
Yeah, sure. So again, just doing a bit of searching around the internet, I came across an interesting warning from Victoria Police where they're saying that catalytic converter thefts are rife at the moment, and they're not being stolen for the actual part itself, but they're being stolen for the valuable metals that make up the part, and that the hottest target at the moment is Toyota Hiace vans, of which there's quite a few out on the roads, as you'd imagine.
Are they easier to get into, Peter, or you just don't know why? That's the way it is.
Well, basically, you just need to get underneath the vehicle to get to them. So perhaps that's why vans may be just a little bit higher or something like that. And people may not even be aware that the converter's being stolen, although there apparently is a bit of a giveaway that if you start your car up and it's sounding a fair bit louder than what it usually used to do, particularly when you accelerate hard, then you might want to have a look underneath to see if you're... catalytic converter's been removed.
I'm not sure a lot of people would know what to look for. What would they look for?
Yeah, well, there'd be a missing section out of the exhaust system, basically.
Oh, it's so in the exhaust, vehicle, is it?
Yeah, it's part of the exhaust system. So they probably either leave the exhaust, or perhaps you might come out in the morning and the rest of your exhaust pipe's lying in the gutter or something. But it was just an interesting thing that pricked my curiosity.
I wouldn't have thought. I'd have thought they just knocked off the cars. I didn't realise they just went around pinching parts.
No, look, I think if there's a quick buck, I think they can do that. And given that every vehicle introduced in 1986, so pretty much every vehicle on the roads now would have the converter fitted, and obviously the purpose of that was to reduce the harmful exhaust pollutants. So obviously it was a good thing. But it's also got some value.
True. Yeah. You just never know what they'll take, do you?
No. And that leads into, you know, another thing that I wrote down because it did happen, something I was involved in quite a number of years ago. There was when I was doing motor vehicle insurance investigations, there was an absolute spate of thefts of Holden Commodore, VL model Holden Commodores. And the insurance companies and everyone was scratching their head. This is in Melbourne. And they were trying to figure out what it was all about until someone realised that they opened a new class of amateur racing at Calder Park Raceway for VL Commodore vehicle.
So you didn't race yours, you pinched one and took it.
Yeah, well, that was the point. You're smashing them up and you needed parts, or you were going through parts, then they were basically stealing. You know, there was just an absolute spate of VL Commodore thefts, and until people figured out what, you know, they'd come back and it'd be stripped of every single component and just a bare shell, just the chassis left behind.
Jeez.
So, yeah, doors, windscreens, you know, even the little water bottle out of your water reservoir bottles, everything. Yeah. Yeah.
It'd make it a cheap way to race, wouldn't it? Piece of parts.
They were like a plague of locusts that had hit the cars that we were, or the shell of the cars that we were going out to see. Yeah. So... yeah.
I have Peter from Absolute Facts with me, and we all know Peter's a private investigator, and he's telling us about various aspects of what he's been up to and what he's been able to find out for us. Peter, we've had another question come in, and it might be that you need to take it for next year, because I'm not sure this is going to be as easy as perhaps... anyway, I'm not sure. Peter, you've said a couple of times that you're involved with corporate crime, that's part of what you do. The person has asked, what's the three most common corporate crimes? Now, are they where they're stealing from their employer, i.e. stealing stock or things from the office or whatever? Is it embezzling, or Is it things like shoplifting? And is it either things that are where people have stolen from the employer or other people are stealing from shops and that? What would the three highest corporate crimes be? Not the most expensive, I guess, the one that happens the most.
Oh, I'd say without doubt it would be shop theft. So retail shop theft under the banner of profit protection or loss prevention, as it used to be called.
Yep.
I suspect that any large retailer that you'd like to think of would suffer a percentage of shrinkage. Yep. Whether that's acceptable to them or not is, right, you know, half of the course, and I won't probably get into stats too much on that. But even if it's a small percentage of a very big turnover, it's a very big number.
Yep.
of in respect to theft or shrinkage.
So number two?
Number two, I probably would say embezzling would be more valuable or higher in value, even though probably less frequent. But right, the result of embezzling, as we've seen from some of the, council sort of activities, councillor activities and contracts and things like that, there's been a few of those cases come up reasonably recently, and the value of what's actually being stolen is quite remarkable.
Yep.
And employee theft can always be an issue, but I think that would be a distant third in, to the best of my knowledge. But look, and I will take it on notice and I'll do some homework.
Yep.
But that would be my first impression, my best guess from my knowledge. Yep. Would be shop theft way in front as far as the actual volume of thefts.
Right.
Embezzling would be second purely based on the value of what's actually, yep, been embezzled. And employee theft would be a distant third, I would think.
When you're looking at it, could you have a look at the value of the employee theft? And what I'm trying to get at, is it, what the person's asked us, is it where people take home pens and paper and, all sorts of different, probably more stationery, or do they actually steal things from the office or wherever it might be?
Absolutely, but it's a question of how much that might add up to. And at the end of the day, could I take a pen home or can I take some stationery or whatever? Well, you know, that the company itself should be able to do some numbers as to as to how much is actually being stolen if they want to do a stock take. The other one that my experience over a few years is a situation where you get a small family-based business that makes it big. Yep. And what happens there is when it's a small family business and someone says, I want to take home half a dozen widgets, everyone goes, yeah, that's fine, just take them, no problem. But as it gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and if the expectation is all employees take home half a dozen widgets, then all of a sudden you've got a problem with the shrinkage. It even could be to the point, and I've actually experienced this, that the people trying to then resell the widgets to get some value for money are actually almost in competition with the original supplier. So there's a secondary market, a black market in the widgets, yeah.
Peter, when you're looking at those three tops for our listeners, something's just occurred to me. When you're looking at shoplifting, are you able to tell us how much of the shoplifting is done by customers as opposed to somebody who works in the shop? Now, I'm not casting aspersions upon shop clerks and shop sellers and all that, but I'm wondering whether there is a percentage of them where the stuff is stolen by the actual employee.
My gut feeling would be 90% would be customers.
Yep.
And 10% would be employees. Knowing that in time, the employees will become too greedy and they'll actually get caught out.
All right, so let me throw another question at you. We'll go back to shoplifting because we're on this thing. What percentage would you say, because you've been involved in a lot of these cases, would be male against female?
Probably, off the top of my head, 90% male, I would have thought.
Are they?
Maybe I probably should say 80, but yeah, it's certainly a far more significant male component.
All right, then let me ask you another question. Does a male steal or shoplift just A, for the thrill of it, or B, to get some money? And let's go to the other 20% of the female. Do they still, I mean, maybe for drug money and that, but how many out of that 20% would steal food because they just can't feed their family? Would you have any stats on that?
I don't have any stats. I have a gut feel that unfortunately feeding a drug habit is probably around about, I would think, at least 50% of the reason for shop theft.
Yep.
And yes, there are certainly examples, probably more so female, that would steal to literally feed the family by absolute necessity, I guess. And what was the other element of the question?
Well, out of that 20%, we'll say the female, what sort of percentage would that, out of that 20%, would half it be to feed the family or would half it be just to steal for either the money or the drug money?
Off the top of my head, I'd say probably only 20% would be to put necessary food on the table.
Yeah, so it's more drug related, or for the dollars, whatever that's going to buy.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Peter, one more quick question and I've got to take a break. We'll still stick with the shoplifting a bit. Has that over the years lifted? Like, is there more shoplifting than what there was 10 years ago now, would you think? Or is it stabilised or gone down?
I think in terms of shrinkage, which is what the corporates would look at, is their shrinkage ratios.
Yeah.
I think they've been around about the same for quite a while. So it might only be perhaps, 3 or 5% for a big box retailer, but it's 3 or 5% of a hell of a big turnover. So it's actually quite a substantial number. For a corner shop or a smaller shop, I suspect, but I don't know this, I suspect their shrinkage is probably more like 10% or so, which probably in some ways harms them more than what the big box retailer...
Some of those big boxes, they're turning over up to $1 million a week. So you're talking even 3% of a $1 million a week, you're talking a lot of money, aren't you?
Yeah, so that, now I've just got to clarify the definition of shrinkage. So shrinkage includes theft, breakage, so there would be a small portion of that, but, of shrinkage, I would suspect 80% would be theft.
Yeah, fair enough. And I should make it clear that when we're throwing these questions at Peter, we're very often throwing to him with no prior knowledge. It's not so we sit here and... he's got plenty of time to look up things at the computer. So if people ring in and ask questions and Peter says it's 20%, if it's 22 or 18%, well, don't hold it against him because, let's be honest, we are really throwing stuff at him thick and fast at times and, everybody wants to know the answer. Now, a couple of things, Peter. Financial inclusion you'd like to talk about. This is, I guess, where the female... is being controlled by not being able to leave if she wants to because she doesn't have any control over the finances. Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, so the start of that was I put up a post acknowledging that the 25th of November was the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women. And the stat that came out of that was that nearly 1 in 3 women have been abused in their lifetime.
Gee, that's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, and in times of crisis, in brackets such as COVID, the numbers rise. So a follow-on to that, then I got into the segue from that was the financial inclusion being a bit of a topic at the moment. And this is also tied into the whole cryptocurrency phenomenon as well and the fact that it will free up availability to control your own funds and things along those lines. And yes, you're right, it's about the females who can often have no access to finances at all. The husband controls the purse strings quite tightly. And so there's a list of 5 A's for financial inclusion, the goals being affordability, accessibility, awareness, availability and adequacy. So that's, I think, from one of those like World Health type sites and things like that, and that was the emphasis is to try and empower and educate, particularly probably more so females than males, to be able to perhaps even squirrel away or start squirreling away a bit of a nest egg or a fallback you know, sum of money they can fall back on if they need to.
It's incredible, isn't it, that a guy would do that to a woman? Like, let's face it, whether they move in together or they get married, I mean, they do this because they love a person, and the next thing they'll just take absolute total control over them. It's almost mind-boggling, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of, sort of ageism-type mentality in here as well, but hopefully you'd like to think that things are starting to progress a little bit more. I mean, you know, perhaps joint bank accounts might be more common than not, but individual bank accounts, particularly for the lady, it probably wasn't something that's really started happening until, I don't know, maybe the last 20 years or so, maybe.
I find it hard to believe that a guy will control a woman to that extent, but I know it happens. I've seen it and I've heard about it. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, it's part of the what you'd probably refer to as the narcissistic tendencies that some males actually have, and that it's a controlling thing, and perhaps there's, you know, quite a number of females out there that would choose to leave a relationship but just physically can't or financially can't because as we referred to before, the purse strings are controlled by one party, not both.
And you walk out the door today, and particularly if they've got a couple of children, I mean, they've got to be fed, they've got to be housed, you've got to go somewhere, don't you? And if you haven't got any money, where's it go? It doesn't. Yes.
And I actually alluded to that when I mentioned about the average age of my customers being a little older than probably what people thought. And
yeah,
it could well be an element of that the lady stays in the relationship whilst the children are growing up. And I've had that said to me a number of times. And, of course, one of the other extensions of that, which I think I might have touched on before, is this whole thing about, you know, pets being used as sort of ransom as well. And,
if you
leave me, I'll cut the dog's throat and all this sort of thing. So there's some pretty scary stuff out there, unfortunately.
Oh, that's not good. Peter, we're getting, unfortunately, close to the stage where I've got to go, and we are coming to the Christmas period. Is there an upsurge in crime over the Christmas period, or do the crooks take a bit of a holiday, or does it just go on the same?
No, I would say Boxing Day sales are probably fraught with risk for anyone, just purely on the volume of movement and activity and the ability to probably move undetected. So no, I wouldn't have thought the shop theft side wouldn't take a holiday. And as far as domestic, you know, problems, obviously everyone knows that Christmas Day can be, you know, one of the worst days of the year for that sort of thing. So catching up with the outlaws, so to speak, and all that sort of thing.
And believe it or not, you're going to tell me, very often Christmas is a time of conflict too, isn't it, in families?
Yes. Yeah, conflict and probably, a feeling of perhaps unfairness and things like that, and it kind of almost goes back in a complete circle with the things that we've been talking about, you know, the parents being asset-rich and the children not so much. So it's a whole... Yeah, and of course you throw alcohol in there, then it's a recipe for disaster.
And you're sitting down, even though you're a family, you're sitting down with people that don't always get on so well too, don't you?
Yes, well, it could be the other side of the family as well, of course.
Peter, unfortunately it's time to go. Look, I've really enjoyed this last two or three months with you, and I'm glad you've agreed to come back next year, because this is an insight into a society that a lot of us just don't ever get involved with.
Yeah, thank you. And I'd just like to wish you and your listeners a safe, more importantly, safe festive season. And I'll catch you in February.
No worries, Peter. And obviously you'll be there for people that need some information or somebody chased up over the Christmas period.
Yes, I'll be contactable pretty much all the way through, other than the obvious public holidays.
Yeah. Well, you have a terrific Christmas, Peter, and I look forward to talking to you in the new year.
Yep, thank you, and stay safe.
Thanks, Peter. Bye.